Happy Monday, Remar nurses. Guess what we're talking about? You know, good old incentive spirometry. I have one at my home. I'm sure maybe you have one at your home. I am really happy to start this week. Actually, super excited to talk about not only this topic, but to do the NCLEX questions and, of course, the Monday motivation. It's all happening right here. This is the largest NCLEX review on the planet right now, right now. There's nobody else with this many viewers who are committed to the process of literally getting better. You're here because you want to be a leader and not a follower. You're trying to take your life to the next level, and you know passing NCLEX is the fastest way for you to do it. You're just one test away from your nursing license, and so you're doing the right thing by being here. Hey, I'm going to help you do it. If this is your first time joining, my name is Professor Regina, MSNRN, the number one NCLEX instructor on the planet. I have here quick facts. You guys know I love quick facts for NCLEX. We'll be studying out of this. What page is incentive spirometry on? I'll tell you. I wanted to do this topic because this goes along with what we have been discussing and dialoguing about, which have been respiratory conditions. And so incentive spirometry, I just have a few notes on IS. I put here IS to share with you. If you have quick facts, you must be memorizing it. You must be memorizing it. You must be getting into the process of just committing this knowledge to your mind so that it can show up when it's supposed to show up. This is incentive spirometry. Go ahead and get out your notes, your pens, your paper, so that we can get right into it. Again, this comes from Quick Facts. I didn't even say the page. Oh my goodness. What page was it? I didn't even say the page. I showed you my notes and I didn't even say the page. That's how excited I am to show this book. And don't forget, this is page 43. Thank you. Thank you so much. This is supposed to be a workbook. So I don't want when you guys show this book for the inside to be pristine and clean. This book should look like it has been through the trenches with you. Like you have taken it everywhere. It's been to Publix and Giant Eagle. It's been to Target. It's been in the back of your car, the bottom of your purse, on the job. It has been everywhere with you. That is how you know that you are serious. If you have this book and you're actually studying it, it's half of my program. So if you don't have this because you're not ready for NCLEX yet, you just started nursing school, check out Quick Facts for Nursing School. It is the companion, the more expounded version, because it is supposed to support you during nursing school. Also, remember, you don't have to have everything memorized. If you have Quick Facts for Nursing School, don't try to memorize it. Too much stuff in there. Don't try to memorize Quick Facts for Nursing School. But everything in the lecture portion of V2, the rest of the program, plus this book, this is the complete program. This is what you have to memorize. No questions asked. If you want to be prepared, then you're going to have to go through a process of training. It's just like anything else that you take serious in your life, any other goals that you have, you need to be trained for it, because there's a lot of things in nursing that you would think would be just common sense, but it's not. There are things that you need to have explained to you, especially if you're an audiovisual learner. If you're the person who is listening to me on the way to work or while you're cooking or while you're cleaning, you are an audio learner. And so it is easier for you to have something explained instead of reading it in a book. And that's why I created the lectures to simulate that learning preference for you. So we're going to get into incentive spirometry. Remember, incentive spirometry is very helpful because it measures the flow of air inhaled into the lungs. Now, I should ask this question first. When IS is ordered, what is it to prevent? Okay. Why is a patient ordered to do incentive spirometry? Is it something that everybody has to do when you come in? Why would a patient get one of these? Why are you incentivizing this device? Because it's called incentive spirometry, because something happens when you do this. What is it? And more importantly, what do you tell your patients to get them to do it? Because this is not always easy to do. So patients, that's right. Patients are prescribed incentive spirometry because it helps them to prevent atelectasis. That's the major thing, especially patients who are immobile or who are not moving around a lot. So this procedure is incentivized because if you do it, guess what? You get to go home. You get to go home, or your oxygenation improves. And that is the benefit of doing this, because it helps those lungs. It helps to measure the air inhaled into the lungs. And so when the patient blows, taking slow, deep breaths into the mouthpiece, all right, it can maximize the lung expansion. All right, but first you inhale. So when you are using an incentive spirometry, the idea is that you're trying to take in air and then you blow it out slowly. But if you just put the incentive spirometry up and you have the patient blowing into it, they're going to be frustrated because nothing's going to happen. Okay. So you inhale, you suck in the air, and then slow, deep breaths to blow it out. This is also called sustained maximum inspiration device. And so you need to know for NCLEX why this is ordered. Okay. Why patients need to do it and be consistent with it. What medications go along with this, and what to do in emergent situations surrounding this. Okay. That's it. And so those are the powerful points that we are going to review today. All right. So let's do this. There's two types that I just want you to know in terms of understanding the terminology here. So the flow oriented spirometer, it evaluates what it says. It evaluates the flow of air, the limitation. It evaluates the resistance to airflow. And so you're able to see the capacity of your patient's lungs, the lung function. Incentive spirometry can be used to diagnose certain conditions where patients have obstructive airway conditions. Now, we have been on obstructive airway conditions for NCLEX for about 2 weeks now. What are the two major obstructive airway conditions that we have been talking about? What are they? Okay, because you can use this device to help you diagnose if your patient has those. The volume-oriented spirometer, this helps to measure the volume of air. So it helps to see not if there's so much a blockage or resistance, but how much air can the patient hold? And on the incentive spirometer, there is always a goal marker. So respiratory therapy should tell your patient what is their capacity for air, and they should be able to put it right on the device. So this also becomes the incentive. This also becomes the goal for the patient while they're doing it. Can they get the ball or the measure cup or whatever to that number? So this device is flexible, and it is used to determine obstruction or just airflow. It assists the client to breathe slowly and deeply. That allows them to sustain maximal inspiration while providing immediate positive reinforcement. So because we as nurses or respiratory therapy will mark the goal right on the machine, they will be able to see immediately, hey, how close am I? Am I there? Am I able to reach it? And it's such a good feeling for patients when they're able to, in real time, evaluate their progress. Benefits of IS are going to be, of course, assisting the patient in respiratory gas exchange, enhancing pulmonary ventilation, helping the patient to sustain deep breathing when we are doing it by ourselves. Sometimes we do it too quickly. And so this device helps you to slow down. And shout out to all the nurses that are passing the NCLEX. They're giving good reports. Oh, it's a good feeling here on Monday. I can tell already. Promoting the release of respiratory secretions. Of course, if we're trying to prevent atelectasis, also pneumonia, right? then that is going to be extremely important for us to do, as well as opening collapsed alveoli. Now, all of us at some point have experienced atelectasis. We all have experienced it. However, because we are moving around and very mobile, it does not affect us. We're able to re-expand our lungs, get that oxygen where it needs to be, and keep it moving. However, if you're laying in a bed all day, or you just had surgery, it is going to be very easy for you to be in a condition of sustained atelectasis, which we don't want for our patients. So I have here the indications for incidence bronchi can be diagnostic or therapeutic. Diagnostic or therapeutic. The two obstructive conditions that IS would be able to help diagnose are going to be asthma or COPD. Asthma or COPD. Because remember, with this device, you are trying to see how much oxygen can get into the lungs. And if your patient has a narrow, narrow airway like asthma, well, what is our reading going to be? Our reading is going to be in a deficit. If our patient has COPD, they are not going to be able to properly utilize the incidence spirometry. And so you can say as a nurse, there's something going on with you because you're just not able to inhale what a normal person your age, your size, your condition should be able to inhale. You're not able to do it. But I ask the question here, when you are trying to figure out if a patient has asthma or COPD, you need to give a medication first, or the doctor will prescribe a medication first to determine if the condition is asthma or COPD. If they have an obstructive constrictive condition, what medication should be given? So this is the idea. The patient gets the medication and then they do incentive spirometry, and then you can see if they got better, they got worse, where they are. What medication is that going to be? This is a good NCLEX question. This is a good next gen NCLEX question, because you can't just guess it. You have to logically think about it. And so that condition, that medication is going to be, I don't know if I put it on here. The medication is going to be a bronchodilator. Yes, the bronchodilator. If we give a patient a bronchodilator, we would expect them to have open airway. All right. If a patient has asthma, perhaps they do incidence spirometry, can't get where they need to go, give them a bronchodilator, finds that the condition opens up, they have air. We say, maybe you have asthma. Maybe you have, another obstructive condition like COPD, right? So we know if we give the bronchodilator, they do incidence spirometry, they don't get better. What is the next medication that we have to give them or think about giving them? That corticosteroid. And that corticosteroid reduces the inflammation, and that will let us know, okay, this patient has this, all right? So it's helping to diagnose the difference between obstructive condition or if it's pneumonia, right, where it's fluid. This incentive spirometry can go a long way. It can go a long way. Therapeutic-wise, you can give it to treat conditions, right? So maybe your patient doesn't have asthma. Maybe they have pneumonia. Well, this is going to help to do what with pneumonia? Think about it. Think about what the problem is. It's not so much obstruction. It is what? Okay, I'm going to let it put in the comments. I'm going to let the comments be your guide today. All right, let me see if I see it. Okay. Yeah, so pneumonia is a different problem. Fluid, right? After a thoracic surgery, this device is going to be therapeutic because it's going to exercise the lungs. Pulmonary atelectasis, weak respiratory muscles, clients who have undergone a CABG where they've had open heart surgery. You know, when you open up a patient's chest, and then you close it back up, how difficult, how painful, how immobile is that patient going to be or going to want to be? Have you ever, for those of you who've ever taken care of a CABG patient before, extremely challenging. Post-COVID, the respiratory damage that is done during a COVID infection can be brutal, especially depending on the patient's age, their weight, and their comorbidities. So the atelectasis and pneumonia and failure to thrive, all of those things can present itself after a COVID infection. So before doing incentive spirometry, the nurse should assess the following things: the presence of pain, because if a patient has pain, it will affect their breathing, but pain also affects the learning. And so when a patient is in pain, you cannot teach them anything. You cannot expect them to teach back what you've demonstrated because they didn't hear it the first time. Nurses who are empathetic understand this. And so they give pain medication before they do procedures. Okay. Lung sounds, knowing the baseline of your patient, their respiratory status, their oxygenation status is very important. Also, their vital signs should be assessed. Very easy information for you to remember. I just want to make sure that we talk about it so there's no surprises. Nursing considerations are pain medication if the patient feels pain prior to the procedure. Referring to respiratory therapy, RT in these type of situations, they are so helpful to have and bring into the room because we are not specifically trained as nurses to know all the intricacies of flow rates and lung capacities and ratios. We just don't have it. Okay? We don't have it. And if you can empower somebody with knowledge, they feel much more in control of their care. And being in a hospital can be extremely scary if you yourself don't know the basics, or if you cannot learn the basics of your disease process, your diagnosis, the reason why you're in there. It is very important for people who are admitted to the hospital to be able to have a conversation about what's happening. It's so scary when my family members go into the hospital or see their doctor. It's scary to me. And I ask them, what happened? And they say, oh, I went into the doctors and he put me on these medications. Well, what medications did he put you on? Oh, I don't know. He told me one was for my diabetes and another one was for my hypertension. And I'm sitting there like ready to like explode. Like, you don't know the medication name. You don't know the dose. They're like, no. The doctor just told me I take it once a day. And it's just, maybe it's just me, but it is so important for us to be able to empower our medications. I have a couple pet peeves. The older I get, the more pet peeves. Getting into a cold car. I like for my cars to heat up and be warm when I get into it. I do not like to get into a cold car. People not knowing the medications that they take. I have to tell them. I got to write it down. You have to know your medications. You have to. So as nurses, we have to be able to connect our patients to what's important. Practicing safe nursing ourselves, teaching the patient how to do the procedure, the incentives of it, the benefits of it. A lot of patients are afraid when they're put on oxygen that they may be going home with it, that they may have to wear it forever. You know what will reduce your chances of needing to go home on oxygen? If you do this, okay? If you do this, the oxygen can come off. And so those are some of the things that help to incentivize this procedure, as well as knowing the complications that can come along with it. If this procedure, some patients, when they get this, they just want to show the nurse that they are ready to go home. So they do this like, they just do this over and over and over again. That can cause problems too. That can cause problems too. Nobody should be doing this more than like 10 times an hour. That's it. That's a lot. That's a lot. So we tell our patients, hey, don't do too much of it because you're going to have issues when you hyperventilate or you're breathing. Like you can have a lot of issues if you do this too frequently too. So I want you to take the time to really consider incentive spirometry as a health procedure and what your responsibilities are as a nurse. Now, here are some NCLEX questions. I'm going to just give you the questions today because I'm really expecting everybody here to give me a 4 out of 5. 4 out of 5. I wrote these questions in a way that you should be able to pick up on them very easy. Here's the first question. Here we go. A new registered nurse is assigned to assess clients who need incentive spirometry. Which of the following should the nurse include? A client taking diuretics, a client taking a bronchodilator, a client with a Glasgow Coma Scale of 3, or a client for intubation? This is a perfect NCLEX question. Perfect. And if you have come to class and you know the content, this will be easy for you. But imagine if you just sat down and this was the first question that you got and you had not studied incentive spirometry. Like, that's the nightmare I don't want you to have. So I know that you came to class, right? You listened to it. So this is easy for you. The correct answer is indeed client number 2, a client taking bronchodilator. You now know that incentive spirometry is often paired with a bronchodilator for asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Okay. And this is given before, okay, and after to assess how the patient has done, how the patient has done. All right. So the other ones are not indicated for incentive spirometry. Good job, everyone. Good job. Question 2. The nurse has completed teaching a client how to use an incentive spirometer. Which of the following actions required further teaching? Meaning, they did something wrong. What did they do wrong? All right, that's follow-up teaching. Further teaching means something's wrong. The client breathes out normally. The client inhales deep and slow breaths. The client repeats the procedure hourly. The client holds the spirometer at a 45 degree angle. Which one are you going to say, hey, Mr. Jones, that was great, but just next time, remember to, you're going to require some further teaching on which number. All right, Remar nurses from everywhere, from all over. You are doing the work of a future thank you. Your future self is going to thank you for the gift that you will have given them by showing up today. That's the best thing. Correct answer. Number 4, holding that spirometer at 45 degree angle. It should not be at a 45 degree angle, but held at a 90 degree angle to ensure accurate measurement. All right. Next question. I told you guys should be getting these ones, rolling it through. Here's question number 3. The client reports dizziness and lightheadedness when using the incentive spirometer. Which of the following could be contributing? Number 1, this is a normal finding. 2, inhaling too slowly. 3, lips not entirely covering the mouthpiece. 4, using the incentive spirometer too frequently. What do we say here? The patient is reporting dizziness and lightheadedness. What are we going to correlate that to? Correct answer. You got it. You got it. Using that incentive spirometer too frequently. If the client performs the procedure too rapidly, it can cause hyperventilation, which can lead to respiratory alkalosis. Remember, breathing too fast. So dizziness and lightheadedness is commonly felt if a client has respiratory alkalosis. So we need to tell the patient to slow down. Okay. Now, question number four is coming up. Are you ready for it? If you're ready, put ready in the comments. Say, I'm ready for this. I feel good about this subject. I'm rolling through it today. A post-operative client has been using an incentive spirometer for 2 days now. To ensure that the spirometer is effective, the nurse should anticipate number one, productive coughing, two, shallow breathing, three, wheezing, or four, crackles that are soft. It's in the question. The answer is in the question. I'm asking you if the spirometer is effective, what should we anticipate? And so this demonstrates if you have studied the topic or if you just kind of know the name and a little vagueness, or if you really, really know the topic. If you really know the topic, the correct answer that you should be typing or saying or writing down is productive cough. If the incentive spirometer is doing what it's supposed to do, then that means that it is mobilizing the secretions so that they can be dispelled out of the patient's body. If a patient's having shallow breathing, that's not indicating that the spirometer is effective. If the patient is having wheezing, that could be that there is an obstruction. And if you hear crackles, that is not an indication that the incentive spirometer is work. That's an indication that the patient has fluid, okay? They're pooling up with fluid, which is not something that we want. All right. So getting into it, I'm going to give you question number five because I don't want anybody here to not be able to clear these types of questions because more than likely, they are going to directly involve the airway of the patient. And these are a must. You have to get these ones right because we know how important airway is. It comes before breathing and circulation. And so this device, okay, let me just go. Question number five. The nurse is monitoring a client who is using incentive spirometry after an appendectomy. There we go. The client reports pain and difficulty breathing after using the spirometer four times. What should the nurse do? Let me read that again. The nurse is monitoring a client who is using incentive spirometry after an appendectomy. The client reports pain and difficulty breathing after using the spirometer four times. What should the nurse do? Number one, explain that this is normal. Two, administer pain medication. Three, apply 2 liters of oxygen via nasal cannula to the client. Four, assess the pain. So, this is an interesting situation here. And remember, you have to be flexible with your understanding. And you also have to be able to evaluate the setting circumstances. Okay. So, what would you go with here? What are you thinking? The controversy. This is the thing about next-gen NCLEX. Everything looks good. I can kind of talk my way out of the right answer if I wanted to. And that's the danger. So go with your first mind. I'm expecting you to read the scenario and pick number four. I'm expecting you to pick number four. Why? Because in this scenario, well, it's the nursing process, number one. That's number one. But in this scenario, there are many reasons why the patient could have pain. And so you cannot do the other things until you know what the pain is from. The person is doing incentive spirometry, but they just had an appendectomy. So the patient's reporting pain, chest pain. You don't know what is it, the appendectomy pain, difficulty breathing, what is going on? We need to assess the patient first before we are doing anything else. All right, we don't put oxygen on the patient. We're not giving pain medicine. We need to figure out what is going on with the patient. So I hope you got that one. I hope you understand the reason for the right answer while we're talking about it. These are very important principles. And I just love that subject. I love that subject. This is our quick check-in that we do on Mondays at noon. Very important part of the journey. Very important part of the journey. So if you have the quick facts, then we are doing parts of the quick facts. But hey, also, we are going to be starting to do parts of the V2 workbook. My V2 workbook is back there. But we're going to be going over sections in the V2 workbook on Mondays and Wednesdays. So just hold on to your horses because we are going to be leaving quick facts and going into V2, which is going to be very exciting for us to make that transition. I'm looking forward to it. I hope you are too. Hey, I'm also looking forward to this motivation today. Just because it's hard doesn't mean it's impossible. This is for somebody. This is for somebody, and I'll tell you who it is for. This girl right here. So the Monday motivation is this. It comes from Genesis 18. And I'm asking the question, how can we tell when there's an absence of faith in our lives? How can we tell? What does it look like when we don't have faith? And I say here, we stop believing in the impossible. We stop believing in the impossible and we settle for living a small life. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Faith has been our theme for Mondays. Every Monday, it seems like we're trying to reset our faith. But there is a really interesting thing that happens to us when we lose faith. We start settling and we talk ourselves out of the things that we really want. And it's so sad. It's so sad when you are the reason for your own situation. So, but it's not only you. And that's what I love about the Bible is that it spotlights real people. So we're going to talk about these two today. We're going to talk about this couple today and what it looked like for them and the lessons that we can learn. Y'all know Abraham and Sarah, good old Abraham and Sarah. So check this out. Let me read this. Genesis 18, 11 through 15. And this is like the New Living Translation. And I just love it. Abraham and Sarah were both very old by this time. Sarah was long past the age of having children. So she laughed silently to herself and said, "How could a worn out woman like me enjoy pleasure? Especially when my master, my husband, is also old." So God had told them that they were going to have a baby. And when she heard it, it's the impossible. It's the impossible to her. Like the thing that God wants for her, the blessing that God has in his mind for her, she cannot receive it. So she says, "How could a worn out woman like me enjoy such pleasure, especially when my husband too, he's old." Then the Lord said to Abraham, said to her husband, "Why did Sarah laugh? Why did she say, 'Can an old woman like me have a baby?' Is there anything too hard for the Lord? I will return about this time next year and Sarah will have a son." This is what I love about God in this story is that even when we don't believe, he still continues to be faithful. And that shows me that God loves me more than I even love my own self. When I don't think that I am able to do something, God still believes in me. Even though at the moment, there is no evidence that I'm going to be able to do it. There's no evidence. And it confuses God. He says, "Why did she laugh?" And so sometimes God is looking at our own situation like, why is she afraid? Why is she struggling with anxiety? Why does she not believe that I am working this out for her good? Why doesn't he think that he will be delivered from this? And it confuses God. It says, is there anything too hard for the Lord? Like, I literally created this entire place by the words of my mouth. I'm the one that timed the stars and the moon. I'm the one that breathes breath into every living thing. And you don't think that I can birth? Come on, come on. And so God says, I will do this thing just to show that I am the Lord. And this is so. God is looking to show himself strong in our lives. You know, God says, test me, prove me. Prove me that I'm not the ultimate provider for you. Prove me that I will never leave or forsake you. And so he like takes on this challenge of this woman not believing that he can do what he said he can do. And this is the thing about it. Sarah was afraid. So she denied it. She said, I didn't laugh. But the Lord said, no, you did laugh. Right? And that is God's character. He's all truth. He's all truth. And if you are going to participate in this relationship with God, you have to be willing to be truthful with yourself and with God. Because if you're pretending to be something that you're not, God can't work with you. God cannot deliver, God cannot save who you're pretending to be. Like Jesus did not die for the fake Regina who is inauthentic and just pretending. Like he's looking for the real me. He's looking for the real you. So Sarah had this problem where she couldn't keep it real about her struggles. Oh man. Sarah had this problem where her faith, and you guys know the story. I'm not even getting into the deep, deep story, where her faith had her so desperate. I'm so sorry. Her lack of faith had her so desperate that she sent her husband in with another woman. Not a good look. Like not a good look, right? Her faith had her so her lack of faith had her so desperate that she was trying to manipulate situations, and she ended up hurting a lot of people because she just couldn't be truthful about her own struggle. So she lies to God and say, I didn't laugh. And but God comes back with the truth and say, no, you did. You did laugh, right? And so this Monday, this day, I want to make sure that we are clear about our responsibility in the process. Okay. Sarah didn't want to admit that she didn't totally believe she could have a child. So she denied that truth and she laughed at God. Dangerous situation. But in our own lives, what are some things that we do when you don't want to admit the truth about the condition of your faith? In other words, because you don't have the faith that you're supposed to have, what do you do? What are you showing people? What are you allowing to come out of your mouth? That's it right there. That's it. That's it right there. Because you don't have the faith that you're supposed to have, what comes out of your mouth? For some of us, we deny it. Especially when it comes to this NCLEX. When we don't have the faith that we're supposed to have concerning this test, we deny the importance of it, right? We say, oh, it don't matter. Okay. Or people deny the fact that they failed it. They have people believing that they passed it. So they're living a double life. Many people, when they come to us. They're like, oh, people think I passed last year. They think I'm working as a nurse, but I'm still working as a CNA, right? Happens all the time. They ignore it, meaning they put it off. When you don't pass NCLEX, internally, it's just like this thing that's constantly nagging you, right? You didn't pass NCLEX, you didn't pass NCLEX. And so what we do is we suppress it, we ignore it, we go on trips, we plan parties, we do all these things for other people, we get super focused in our kids. Okay, I didn't pass NCLEX, I'm just gonna wait for my kids to grow up and I'm gonna try it again, right? We avoid it. Some people go off into a whole nother career. I didn't pass NCLEX. Yes, I'm only one test away, but guess what? I'm about to go all the way over here and try to get this psychology degree. Or I'm about to go all the way over here and try to become a pharmacist. Okay. So we are avoiding the thing that we don't have the faith that we can actually achieve. And at the same time, sometimes we are avoiding the people who know where we're supposed to be, but we're not there. So we have to duck and dodge our old classmates, or we, you know, our family members that are nurses, people that know we graduated and we still like, we don't want to talk to them because we don't want to be reminded of our lack of faith. And so we're doing everything else that we can do except being honest and truthful. We're like Sarah, we're laughing about it. We're putting on a front because that's what, you know, that's what she does. When you are nervous or anxious or you are doubtful about something, sometimes you do things that don't make sense. So when you're scared, you might laugh. When you're afraid, you might start crying, right? When you're angry, you might start crying. Doesn't make sense, but it's how you are expressing the emotion. So she laughed. But the problem is that she didn't just laugh, she lied about it too. She's like, she couldn't confront her own self to say, you're struggling in this area. And that's what God is looking for. He's looking for us to be truthful about where we are and what we need help with. Because her husband, if you think about her husband, he got caught up into her mess. He went in there with Hagar. He had the baby out of wedlock too. He did all those things. So why is he mentioned, but not her in a positive light later on in the Bible, right? What's the difference between her response afterwards and his response, right? It says this, faith in God makes the impossible possible. Abraham, he had a serious mountain. A seemingly expired promise of God to become a father of many nations. So God promised him this long time ago, and it didn't happen. He and his wife were both past the age of childbearing years, yet he believed anyways. He believed that God was going to do what he said he was going to do in the way he said he was going to do it. And so Abraham's faith in God was able to move mountains because he had the courage to turn and talk to God to the point of trusting him to do the impossible. So even if you stumble along the way, it is better for you to get up, acknowledge where you made a mistake, and keep going. You need to be able to take responsibility for your actions. And then you can give God and you can trust God to do the impossible because you are doing what you can do. Like a failure to me is a person who falls down, who stumbles, and they stay down because that's the last thing that they did. So the last thing that they did failed. That's how you become the identity of being a failure because it didn't work out for you and you just stayed in that situation. But the person who gets back up and tries again and they're trying and they're fighting and they're pushing for it, that person is not a failure. You can't look at that person as a failure. That person is resourceful. That person is determined. That person is courageous. That person should be celebrated because it is so easy to get knocked down and stay down and that become your identity. I don't want that for anybody. I don't want that for none of you. What I want for you to understand on this Monday, and then I'll let you go, is that God's mercy is for everybody. He has a plan for everybody, and he will help us, but you got to do your part. This is your dream. And you are, let me tell you something. You're going to work hard for your dream, or you're going to work hard for somebody else's dream. So it is important that you are working hard to make sure that at the end of the day, you have what you want. Because if you don't have a vision for yourself, if you don't have God's vision for you, right, then you will be living for somebody else's vision. And that's just the truth of the matter. So I want you to understand that there are some very impossible things that are going to be amazing in your life. Things that you never thought you would do. They're there. They're coming. But they're not going to get there fast if you don't believe that it can happen. And God forbid that you let time go by and miss the opportunity to experience all of the blessings that are ready for you. Okay. And is it going to be easy? No, nothing that is worth it is easy, or everybody else would be doing it. But you do have a responsibility to take part in your own dreams. And you do have a responsibility that if you mess up, if you stumble, if you fail the NCLEX, that you are important enough to give yourself another opportunity to try again. That is on you. That has to come from the inside. Your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, your aunties, your uncles, they cannot take this test for you. They cannot study for you. They can only say, baby, we love you. We know you can do it, but you got to believe that you can do it. And so if nobody told you this, you can, you will, and you must pass NCLEX. You got to believe that. You got to believe it. Okay. I'm only here twice a week. The other 5 days of the week, you got to be telling yourself this. Okay. And you're worth it. And I've seen many people who used to be in your situation that are no longer in your situation because they did what they had to do. And so that's it. That's the motivation. All right. Go spread love. Keep your goals in the front of your mind. This is the beginning of the week. It's going to be a great one. We made it. We made it. We made it. We made it. I remember when we were just bringing in 2024. And look at us now. We are already rolling into the year. And this is the year that I want more for you. I want more. So I'll see you inside of the V2. Keep on studying. Follow that calendar. Follow that calendar so you can continue to make progress during the days that we are not together. And I love y'all, okay? Whether you're doing the 1 month, the 3 month, or the 6 month program, you have everything you need to be successful. Get that nursing license. Just do it. Just do it. I'll see you guys on Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. God bless you. I love you. Bye.